Hi everyone, welcome to No Nonsense Whiskey. Vin here, and this is a brand new series called Dram Slam. Today's first guest, it could be none other than Roy Aquavite. He's the forefront of UK Whiskey Tube. He's the mastermind of the V Pub. He's a recycling specialist. He's a whiskey evangelist, and my friend and mentor here is Roy. How you doing, buddy?
I'll take all of those except for forefront of UK YouTube. All the others are perfectly legitimate, but the forefront of UK YouTube, I might have a wee man in the Irish Sea. I might have a wee man down in Manchester. I might have various other people, none least than a wee man down in the Midlands by the title of No Nonsense Whiskey, right? So, but thank you very much, buddy. It's superb. It's always nice to hang out with you. And if we can make content hanging out together, so much the better. Cheers.
Cheers, buddy. So the first question I've got for you, Roy, then, is what's your whiskey origin story?
Well, do you know what? We've already kind of started and struck a chord right there, because you said that the format of the show is going to be interviewing people in the whiskey industry. And that in itself is odd, right? It's bizarre, because my origin is, of course, fully as an enthusiast. I mean, that's what it's all about. That's what brought me to this place. Whiskey brought me here. I don't have any kind of history working in the whiskey industry, or I was in an electronics background. I was in a commercial and marketing background. So whiskey was always a distraction, a hobby, a passion project for me. So what happened is that I got sucked in more and more to my favorite way of consuming whiskey and enjoying whiskey community. And that was very much focused around YouTube. Aquavite started at probably about 2014 as an Instagram account. I had desires of one day kind of writing a wee blog or doing something a bit more focused on sharing. And over as the years ticked by, I got more and more into the YouTube platform. I'd obviously been watching Ralphie for a long time. But when I realized there was lots of other channels out there and the algorithm was recommending those to me on the back of watching Ralphie, I discovered other channels out there like Luke Reimars, who doesn't do videos anymore, unfortunately. You might remember The Whiskey Bitch was a channel too. Amy, she was great fun. And I realized that, you know, I could connect with these people because they're enthusiasts too. It kind of felt like a safe space for me to crawl into. And then Scott and Bart appeared from the Scotch Test Dummies. And I just loved the vibe that they had, because they were very much about the journey. And then so many other channels used a similar format where they were just sharing their exploration. And I thought, oh, come on, you know, this is, Roy, this is a safe place to go into. You don't, you know, there's things to be doing here. There's things to be sharing here. And then the Scotch Test Dummies started to do live streams. And that made me feel part of it. Right, suddenly it's not just you consuming content, but you're actively participating in the content. And that is when everything really took hold. So that was about late 2016, I would guess. And then early 2017, I decided to try my hand at putting out a video, a whiskey-based video, and that's kind of how it started. Interestingly, about 2016, sometime in 2016, my wife and my friend, the Whiskey Rev, said, You should do that YouTube thing. You would probably have fun doing that. You would like that. And I said, there is not a chance you're going to find me on YouTube. And yet they were right. So here I am. So that's kind of how it started. If you talk about origin, as in why I'm on YouTube, that's the story behind that. Yeah. Well, I tell you, I need to pass comment on the Jura first.
Go for it.
I've only got one bottle of official Jura in my collection here. And one independent Jura. It's not a distillery that I'm drawn to often, and it's one that I do have to engage with it at some point. And the first couple of sips of this Jura 18, I was kind of like, "Ooh, this is actually quite nice." But as I've kind of nosed and sipped away at it, the kind of specters of why I don't engage with Jura start to show themselves. This is better than I expected, this 18, but it's kind of, it's almost like I'm sipping a blend. It's like it's been blended out. It's been flattened out. It's been you know, whether that's because of the ABV, which is neither meat nor fish territory, right, at 44%. I don't know what that's telling us at all. Maybe they just think that that's the optimal strength. But we have to guess that at that strength, it's chill filtered, fine. It's coloured, fine. But the experience on the palate for me, this is a product that's designed to be smooth in the glass. And that's how it comes across. It's not offensive. It's actually better than I expected. But it doesn't make me want to pour another glass. And I think that that's unfortunately a common theme with most of, if not all, the Jura official bottlings I've had. But in this Firkin, you've shared with me a 2012 Tullibardine.
Yeah, I mean, they're doing some really interesting things down there. To give you a bit of information about Firkin, if you haven't tried them. It's the mastermind of Mike Collings. If you know who Mike Collings is, he's an ex-Diageo marketing guy who masterminded things like the blue label, the green label, the classic malts range.
What he has here then is a recreated cask made up of Oloroso and Amontillado staves then that he's then filling with, I guess in this case, a Tullibardine spirit, right?
I actually think he splits out, it's like ex-bourbon French oak casks, rebuilds them and then seasons them with the wines and then puts the whiskey in it.
So the Firkin 49 that this one I'm holding, what is that? Is that this edition, this bottling? Or?
Yeah, so he's got four brand names. He's got the Firkin 10, which is a 10-year-old, Firkin 49. 49 is his birth year, I want to say, 1949. He's got the Firkin Rare, which is the first one to have two editions on it. And then the last one, the name escapes me, but I want to say it's like a PT, like the Firkin Pete or something like that.
Well, this one is on the nose is very white winey to me, very spirit driven. It's quite young as well, 2012. I guess it can only be maximum about 9 years old, 10 years old. But you're getting some white wine notes on the nose.
For me, it's not as sherry led as the casks would lead you to believe. But
no, it's the spirit is still in the driving seat here, I think. There is sweetness, there is fruit, there is kind of, dried currants, that kind of thing. Slightly creamy and malty too. Have a wee sip. Oh no, this is quite pleasant. Wow, what ABV is this?
This comes in at 48.9%.
It's bringing some nice grip and things. It kind of wakens up your palate and... But it's nice. It's quite dry and malty, crisp, spirit driven on the palate. But the development goes kind of syrupy and sweet, and it finishes on an almost kind of slightly maple syrup, soft sweet fruit. This is quite a nice wee whiskey, and I think what makes it quite nice is probably the Amontillado and the Oloroso is not overwhelming. It's still quite nicely balanced with the spirit. That's quite a surprise to me. That's nice.
So I suppose I better ask you some more questions while we're drinking this one. We were talking about YouTube earlier, and you mentioned a little bit about starting in Instagram. Obviously, when you started YouTube, you couldn't have known where it will go to as much as we all hope that it will. But what made you go all in on YouTube at the start? You know, you put a couple of videos out, but then you decided to go all in on it.
So I knew that when I started out, I knew that I really didn't see me being very effective I didn't see any attraction in me being a reviewer. So let's say, you know, bottle by bottle, episode by episode, you know, giving a score, that kind of format. I didn't, even back then, 5 years ago, right, that was already pretty well established. And I thought, but where I did see something that I could maybe bring to YouTube was leveraging a wee bit, I suppose, the fact that I live in Scotland and I'm kind of around whiskey a lot here. So, you know, it's no mistake that, you know, one of the first videos that I put out there was a pronunciation video. Because a lot of the content that I was watching, I was really enjoying, but I often felt that there were certain things that were being missed or misunderstood. And if there was any way that I could kind of help fill in some of the troughs and you know, help kind of people understand some of the dynamics specifically behind Scotch whiskey, I thought that maybe that could be an area for me to play in. What happened in the end is because the first few videos I put out were very edit heavy, and I was just too picky and too self-critical, and I realized that was going to get in the way of what I wanted to do, and also time. So the live streaming came along, and when I started, you remember, we were already friendly and speaking back then when I started that. And I just wanted a hangout. I wanted a virtual club is what I wanted. I wanted a space for people to get together, and I wanted a place for the people that were already engaging with the channel at a very young age to be able to connect with them. And that's what drew me in, because I don't stick at things. I'm very flaky. I'm kind of project to project. That's always the way I've been in life. So for me to stick at the V-Pub is something I'm very proud of on a personal level, because I've stuck to that twice monthly for the first couple of 3 years or whatever. And then obviously because of lockdown, that forced it to be suddenly twice weekly. But it's balanced out now to being a weekly thing, and I stick to it. And even when I'm traveling and going away and things, if I take a week off or a week away from the V-Pub, it has to be for a legitimate reason. I really try hard to stick at it. That's what's drawn me all in, the people side of it, being able to use it as a platform to connect. And that virtual club, that virtual pub, that virtual environment, that whiskey space has become dear to me, very dear to me. So are we really going to do this?
Yeah, I mean, I'm, if it makes you feel better, I'm drinking it along with you.
Now, I have tried this before, but it was so long ago that my memory, there's been a lot of whiskey has been consumed in between time.
Let's see what we get, right? Cheers.
Okay, here goes. Oh, wow.
I mean, it smells so bad.
You know, I have to say that there's, you know, cinnamon is a thing that I like to discover in whiskey. When I'm nosing whiskey, I like to discover a little bit of background cinnamon. But the cinnamon in this, do you remember Daredevils? They were huge, cinnamon-flavoured, really hot gobstoppers. They were about, you know, an inch in diameter or so, right? There were something of my childhood. They came in a pack of three, and they were so hot. And that's exactly what this smells like. It reminds me of that. It's just all about the cinnamon. Can you smell anything past the cinnamon?
No, I mean, when I took my whiskey coin off, they're all behind here with the hats on, and just the room smelled of cinnamon immediately.
Exactly. It's meant as a fun drink, right? And it's much in the same way that I used to drink Drambuie, I used to drink Glevah, which are whiskey-based liqueurs. This is kind of a similar thing, and it might be, you know, not something that we drink as whiskey enthusiasts. I'm going to suggest that also the way I'm nosing this just now, it's really quite sweet. There's probably a lot of sugar in here as well. But much in the same way that those drinks are effective in bringing people into the category, and as time goes on, they start to dial out the sugar and look for some things that are a bit less sweet. Let's have a wee sip then. I know you've tried this already. Okay. You know, see if this was less sugary, less sweet. I could drink this. The cinnamon is all over the place. I can imagine this being, you know, poured over a freezing cold chunk of ice in a cold glass and just sitting, and as the ice melts and the thing becomes more and more diluted, being quite a pleasurable thing. Not comparable to drinking a malt whiskey or a premium whiskey, sure, but it could be a pleasant experience. However, for me, I think the off-putting thing is this aftertaste that I'm speaking through right now, which is very sickly and sweet, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've already put it back and rinsed my mouth out, because it's... I don't like cinnamon. So, you know, I suffer as well as anybody on the show, that's for sure.
I like cinnamon. I love cinnamon. But it's a very Christmassy spice for me. It reminds me, I spent a winter and Christmas in New York once, and cinnamon was all over the place. It was just a very, very seasonal spice. And I do like it. But there's apart from cinnamon and sugar, there's not much more than that. I mean, it's quite impressive that they've got that 33% ABV to a point that you're not really thinking about alcohol at all, right? I mean, this is something that I probably wouldn't reach for very often. But I now that I've tried it, I'm not going to make fun of people that enjoy this. I get it.
There you go. That's two curveballs for you today.
Well, thanks for that, Finn.
No worries. Let's have a cleanse and we'll move on to something a bit better. Yeah, next up, we've got one of mine.
Well, I tell you what I'm going to do then. I'm going to keep this wee bottle intact then so I can gift it to somebody and I'll just pour from your bottle. Was that not a good idea?
An excellent idea.
So this is from a Richard Hoggy. This is young whiskey, right? Your Aberfeldy.
Absolutely, yeah.
But this, I know that this is natural colour, and I'm quite struck by how much colour after 6 years that Richard Hoggy has given up, right?
Absolutely.
Have you still got some of this left?
Oh yeah. I mean, I've got 10 or 15 pairs on the USKI website still available. Yeah, it's still around for sure.
Oh wow.
While you're nosing that, then let me ask you, as a primarily Scotch based person, obviously you're into your world whiskies as much as anyone is, but what do you think about the kind of global whiskey market at the moment? Obviously it's up and coming everywhere, everyone's trying to jump on the bandwagon. How do you think that coexists with Scotch, let's say?
Right now it's all a matter of scale. So when we talk about, you know, this global expansion and this explosion of world whiskies, we kind of have to kind of just look at scales to put everything into perspective. So if you imagine if you were to take all of the Tasmanian whiskies and New Zealand whiskies and Australian whiskies and lump them all together, you know, you're still not even close to the size of a huge Scotch malt distillery, right? So, and that's the same across the, you know, a lot of the smaller new distilleries being founded in Ireland. Some of them are decent size, some of them are quite big concerns, don't get me wrong. The same in England, the same across continental Europe. America is very granular. So we're seeing a huge explosion in variety, but in terms of scale, it's not really troubling a lot of the Scotch traditional market and sales. You know, it's a different thing. So if you were to compare it against premium Scotch whiskies, single malt whiskies, the type of thing that we enjoy engaging with, then that's where you would frame it. But you can't really compare it against the big brands, the Glenfiddichs and the Glenlivets, and certainly not any of the blends. It's almost like a completely different category, albeit it's still whiskey. I love it. I love variety. That's why I'm into whiskey. I drink a lot of whiskey, but I don't drink a lot of volume. I drink a lot of variation in whiskey, probably the same as you. It's a different thing. We are not buying a bottle of our favorite brand, draining it and replacing it with another bottle of the same things. We are promiscuous. So that means that even if it's only to sanity check our love of our favored category, it makes sense to explore all of these amazing whiskies that's coming out all over the world. And you know, even if you decide that you prefer your single malt Scotch or you prefer your single pot still Irish or your bourbon, whatever your category of choice is, by exploring the other whiskies, you give your palate a much more mature kind of frame of reference, I think. And that's what's fascinating about this era that we're living in today. And that's why I love trying everything.
Absolutely. Yeah, I completely agree. Completely agree. Obviously, I don't know if you know this, but I selected these, the two whiskies. This is the second release. I selected these blind out of some samples that were sent to me. Obviously, you're a big purveyor of the blind tastings. So I think those have disappeared a little bit from the channel now. But at the start, especially, I think I was one of the first to engage with that with you. And I just wonder, if you still into the kind of blind tasting things privately off screen. Is this something that you still crack on with? You still a full believer of how the blind tasting changes things in your brain?
No, absolutely. In fact, what I was doing yesterday evening, I can't show you the labels of what these are, but you can see that these four bottles, I've got the colour dots on top, and these are cask samples. for exactly what you're talking about, for me to try and find a cask that I really want to, one that I love and I think would make a good community release, right? Mm-hmm. But not only for that, for you know, challenging myself, my capabilities, the way I assess whiskies, the way I understand whiskies, to remove bias and preconception, for just so many reasons, and just the sheer entertainment and the humbling dynamic, I remain obsessed with blind tasting. And you're absolutely right, that relay thing that started with the channels, it's still going on, and I have, it's Sean from the Scotch for Dummies, did one much, much earlier in the year and sent me the footage, and it will kick back into life, because I still think it's got a good place, because it's not just about blind tasting in that concept, in that context, it's about the collaboration of all the channels, right? The way that we work quite closely together and we support each other. So I want to do it for that reason at least. But yes, the short answer, Vin, is I'm obsessed. I remain obsessed with blind tasting. Don't you enjoy it?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's something I do very regularly off camera, and it's absolutely terrifying to do it on camera, because after my initial opening salvo with you being really very good, the community holds me in some kind of false high regard on that, and I've never never proven it again. Even to the point where we did one recently with you on a live stream, people in the comments were like, yep, Vin's got this, and I had like one out of the five right by the end of it. So yeah, it's tough.
And how much criticism did you receive from anyone on that?
Oh, I mean, yeah, you get your playful comments, don't you? Of course, you know, like, yeah, basically, I think someone said that I shouldn't have a channel, but they were obviously joking. Anyone who's ever blind tasted some whiskey, even from their own reserves, and I implore anyone to do it, get your significant other or whoever to pour you something random from your collection, especially if you've got a big collection like me and Roy, and I guarantee you won't have a bloody clue what it is. Yeah, you'll get smoke where you didn't get it before, you'll get no smoke where you did get it before, and it messes with your mind.
However, on that 1 in 100, when you do guess it, you know, it's just epic. It just makes you feel so like, wow, this isn't all smoke and mirrors. There is something to this. But it is. It's, you know, my kids and my wife both will pour me things and try to get me to guess. It's almost like a little game of, is it a Speyside? And I think it is. It's just great fun. And there's nothing better than to keep your feet on the ground, you know, in terms of your approach to whiskey. I'm enjoying your Aberfeldy tonight. It's taken a nice, healthy scoosh of water well. It just brings out an amazing dose of orange blossom and thick honey.
It's one of those ones where it, like, sometimes we say for every year in the cask, you should have it a minute in the glass or something like that. This one benefits from being out on the side for as long as you can dare to leave it. You know, if you want to make it with your dinner and then have it 2 hours later, it will shine.
Well, I know. I also know that you're on record as being somebody who has very, very quickly moved to enjoyment of high ABV whiskies. So I know that you've been very much focused on no-nonsense whiskies, and you're trying to find the best value, and you love nothing more than discovering a good budget whiskey that delivers. But you have to admit that, like so many of us, and it can be a difficult thing to come back from, we look for the vibrance, the engagement, the grip, the communicative, powerful delivery of higher ABV. And I think that that's what's going on in this glass. This is, that makes perfect sense to me why you love this so, because it's very vibrant and alive on the palate, right? It's very communicative. I've put a wee scoosh of water in it tonight, and that's what's kind of brought out that orange blossom and honey, I think.
That's the interesting thing about when it was picked, because it was picked blind, I had no inclination of the distillery that I was picking or the price point that it was going to be sold for. So to get an Aberfeldy, which is very rarely independently bottled, for a sale price of, I don't know what it is, like £45, I think this is selling for.
Yep.
Personally, I think it's a bit of a bargain, but, you know, also a little bit of luck, because it was just entirely flavour-led when I picked it.
So Svensk Rok is Swedish oak, right?
It's Swedish smoke. Eck is...
Eck is Oak, yeah.
Eck is Oak, right. Yeah. It's obviously peat fired, but they chuck in about 10% of it is juniper branches, for better or worse. So it, you know, it's one of my favourites of their core range, I have to admit.
I know you're a McMira fan. I know you like the distillery. This is a, it's clearly peaty, but it's not powerfully peaty. There's a nice kind of sponge cake vanilla thing going on here too, in the background. The fruit is like a cooked fruit, like it is quite jammy, which is where I'm getting that sponge cake thing from. It's almost like Mr. Kipling cakes in a glass.
I mean, I find the McMira range to have this kind of like constant, like you said, jammy, almost tropical flavour that goes through the entire range. If you do a vertical tasting, you'll see what I mean. An intriguing spirit, I think. And funny that we're now on the, apart from the Fireball, the only non-Scotch on the table, that we should talk about your upcoming project, your project that's running right now, the Oswa. Do we say Oswa or do we say OSWA?
I think you can say, you know my rules on pronunciation, right? Say whatever you like. Say whatever you like. If we were to brand it or have like some kind of given name, then probably there would be a right way to say it. But given that this is brand new, Oswa seems to run off the tongue easier than I imagined. Ralphie came up with the name before he came up with how it was going to work. He knew what he wanted to achieve, but I don't think he was sure how we could make it work. But he knew that Online Scotch Whisky Awards was going to be the name, and then I talked him out of it. And then I talked him back into it again, which is a good process to go through, because what that means is that you've kind of really kind of, you know, you've picked a rug off the floor, you've taken it outside, you've given it a bloody good shake, you've brought it back in and put it back down to see how it is. And then you've decided, you know, yeah, that's the good place to have this rug, right? So we, Oswa is okay to me. Online Scotch Whisky Awards. Oswa is good because it's a kind of shorthand way to very specifically give that specific thing its place. So yeah, it's, you know, we're going to make a lot of mistakes with this thing. We're not going to make everyone happy. I don't think an awards ceremony by definition has the ability to do that. So the fact that a lot of people are unhappy and up in arms about things shows that they're invested. And they're rooting for the whiskies that they're enjoying or the distilleries that they're connected with. So all of that is a positive thing. If we're getting people complaining that their whisky didn't make it, I think you need to look at that through a certain lens and see it as a positive thing. But I am okay. I have become comfortable with referring to it as the Oswas. I don't know, how are you doing it? How are you referring to it?
I'm going with Oswa because it's been abbreviated as the website. So for me, I mean, you could say it in its full thing, but it's like saying the BAFTAs, right? But it seems like it's been a hell of a thing to organise, way more than people would think. You know, we see the website, we see the forms, we see the posts, but you've been dealing with this for a while now, right?
Yeah. So I was... Ralphie and I were involved in a conversation at the end of last year and earlier this year, where the two of us were putting our tinfoil hats on and really exchanging stories about all the craziness that goes on behind the scenes in terms of what's essentially a very cosmetic presentation of the thing that we hold very, very dear. And that is the idea that they just basically colour it to the customer's request, whatever, you know, that might be, wherever they are in the world, whatever scale of distribution they represent, whatever it may be. No, we want the whiskey to be this color, and the whiskey is delivered so. Yes, we don't want it to be cloudy upon arrival at the customer destination. We can't have that, so it needs to be chill filtered, or we don't want it to be cloudy in the glass and all of these things. And so all of these cosmetic things are done to this beautifully natural traditional product. Malt whiskey can never be that. Even as somebody the scale of Macallan, the scale of Glenfiddich or Glenlivet, making malt whiskey in a batch process inevitably invites batch variation, and it and puts a huge amount of pressure on a master blender in order to bring a consistent product time after time. A blender is the word. That's their job, to try and make something that's good time after time. Why we're trying to blend single malts to be the same time after time again is understandable, but at the same time, it should be with the caveat that much in the same way that any kind of branded wine is going to be different depending on the year it was made or whatever. And it's kind of accepted that wine being an organic product is going to vary over the years, and it's understood. It's not a huge leap for us to understand that malt whiskey will change year by year. And if there's an age statement on there, and if there's kind of lots of married casks in order to achieve that, that one year they might succeed in producing something that's better to your palate than other years. I think that we need to start educating the customer base and stop the customers telling us what they want, that forces us to then bastardize a beautiful product. And I will not accept any arguments or discussions about people can't tell the difference between chill filtration and non-chill filtered. People can't tell if there's colour added. It doesn't taste. That's just absolute nonsense. If you put a tiny dot of colour in, sure, you can't taste it. If you're heavy-handed with colour, you can taste it. If you have the same batch of whiskey, that pre-chill filtration and post-chill filtration, that doesn't happen, but if you were to taste them, you would taste the difference. And the reason I know that is I ask the people who are involved in this, I ask the whiskey makers, is there a difference? And every single one of them, unless they have an agenda or an ulterior motive, they say, absolutely, it makes a difference. It makes a difference. Now, does it mean the difference between enjoyment and not enjoying it? No, of course not. It's all degrees. So Ralphie and I, out of this kind of passion for trying to get more and more natural product, we're not trying to turn the industry on its head, but what we are trying to do is ask the people that are charged with making premium spirits for premium enjoyment, make it natural, please. Don't take anything away and don't add anything. And then in March this year, Ralphie just sends a message to say, what do you think about this? I had barely read his message and I replied, yes, let's talk about this, I'm in. So he came up with the title, he came up with what it was going to be, he came up with the spirit of it, what it was intended to do. But most of the mechanics in the order how to deliver that and how to present it has been I think that makes sense, right? You play to your strengths. Ralph is the guy with the mission, and he's the guy that's the figurehead, and he's the guy that's going to kind of rail and make sure this thing succeeds as much as possible. And I'm kind of there to try and deliver it. Sorry, I've gone on a wee bit, but that's kind of, it's been a hell of a lot of work, and I'm glad that you can see that, or you get the sense that there's a lot of work there. At the end of the day, we're just doing what we can with the tools that we have. With the community and on side, I think we can only succeed, right?
It should grow if you do it again and again. But what do you expect will happen on the day? What can people expect from the final show? Because it's going to be live stream, correct?
Yeah, that's going to be... Well, the first thing is that we have to be in a position that Ralphie feels comfortable traveling, right? So, you know, he's been in a fortunate position, I think, of being out there on Isle of Man, and he's been able to keep himself quite protected during the global pandemic and all of these things. And we're probably 50-50 right now. There's a 50% chance that he'll be here in order for us to deliver it live together. But the plan B is that we just do it the way that everybody's become used to doing it, that he dials in remotely and things. I think it would be a much nicer vibe and dynamic if we were in the same space, but I'm not going to, if it needs to be that we do it remotely. So on the day, it's 6 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon on the 6th of November. It won't look like the V-Pub. It'll be a completely cleansed environment, not Aqua Vitae, not Ralphie. It'll be kind of Roy and Ralphie representing all of our community and all the kind of values that we're trying to put first and foremost here. And we will simply go through and really what the community has fed back to us. We've done our job, right? we've kind of stood up and we've taken our place as kind of that guiding light, that kind of resource. So we try all the whiskies. So the ones that we recommend are only a portion of what we've tried. And that means that hopefully the community are able to benefit from our financial outlays and our mistakes and things, right? So we've taken our place as kind of reviewers and said, as a collaborative team, we've come up with these nominations. So our job is done now. So we sit back and we let the community feedback to us. And all that we're asking is that just vote for something that's good quality, you feel is good value and it's available, and something that you would replace, put back on your shelf, and certainly something you would recommend to a friend. And if you find it there, vote for it. If you find that you can't vote for any of them, fine, skip the vote or leave a people's choice. I was worried about that because we're creating a lot of data, Vin, that we might never use or look at. That's what I was worried about. So we're getting hundreds and hundreds of votes. You know, in the first 24 hours, in fact, while we were live, it broke 100, but the next morning we were at 250 votes. And then I think average is between 50 and 100 votes per day as being catalogued. It's just clicking on and on and on and on. So for each of those votes that I mentioned, somebody's going in and making potentially anywhere up to 8 votes each. We want to make that part of the discussion, and we want to make the fields where people have given us their feedback part of the discussion as well, and we'll find ways to do that. So it's not a traditional awards model, but it's one that I think suits the place that we enjoy our whiskey in this online environment.
Okay, well, we're just one whiskey left then, if you're ready to grab the last one. Something close to home for you. Probably something you're very familiar with as well, the Glasgow 1770 peated.
So this is a new Glasgow distillery. This is the peated one, which I actually bought. I've bought this on the back of a V-pub I did, where I opened a mini of this, and I found it to be very enjoyable. Now, that's not by mistake that it's ended up in a 1770 glass. I realised I had that, so I kept it for the end. But I hope we can look at the colour of this whiskey. This is no older than your Aberfeldy. I don't know the age of this. There may be some older elements in there, but this is a young whiskey too. So look at how dark that is. And the way I understand that they mature this is they're using quite a lot of virgin oak in there, but this has also got a PX finish, right?
And yeah, like you say, it can't be any more than, you know, maybe 4 or 5 years old tops. I imagine there's still a good portion of 3 in there as well. We don't know, but it's definitely young.
This is all cask. But that's not, I don't want to make that sound negative. This is lots of oaky elements in here, lots of sweetness. The sweetness here are wood sweet things. It's not that kind of confectionery note from spirit sweetness. This is remarkably rich. It's one of those whiskies that I think you could put down and you could have people all over the place. It would take a very, very experienced palate to be able to pick out the youth in this, I think. Because of the heavy cask influence, still very vibrant. But everything's kind of dialed up a wee bit there. And there's enough to make the peat take its place in a lineup rather than be at the front of the line, if that makes sense. Because of how rich the cask influence is here, the peat becomes a savoury element, part of the mix rather than what leads. So if I go back to the McMira, you need to spend a wee bit of time to get that kind of white fruit element, the thing that's going on in the background. You mentioned juniper there. That's very interesting. Juniper used to be something that illicit distillers burned because it didn't give off a lot of smoke, right? They could hide with it. And the fact, the reason that Tomatin has its name is directly to do with the juniper hills at Tomatin. So that's an interesting angle there. But that's... It's very much spirit and peat led. The 1770 is cask and peat led. That's the second time I've had the 1770 peated and been inspired by it. Because I can see a lot of people tend to talk about cask influence and overly cask led as being a negative, but I think it's got its place. If we can do it that way, if we can colour it using those things and naturally, and then not remove these oils and things, I think very, very rich casks have their place.
And yeah, that leads me on to my final question, which is a bit of an open-ended one, which is obviously you've got your Oswald project on the way. You've got your V-pubs continuing for the rest of time. But what do you see the future of Aqua Vitae? You know, you showed some little sample bottles there. Yeah, you got some interesting things in the pipeline.
So yeah, for a bit more than a year and a half, I've been trying to find a cask that means something to me and means something to the channel. So that's going to be a thing in the future, but it has to be something that has a backstory, has a connection. I don't think you and I are going to suddenly overnight turn into independent bottlers. We just don't. It's just, it's a ludicrous idea, I think. However, I think it's nice to have something that the community can all buy and enjoy and have together. So it's a nice project, and I've tried and tried, and there's been a few false starts. But now there are two opportunities on the table that are both just, they fit so perfectly, perfectly well. So I'd like to see those through. One may happen this year, but it's likely that they're both going to come in early 2022. But they're both going to be single casks from distilleries that are, let's say, dear to me, ones that I particularly love. And the great thing about it is that I've been able to go to direct to the distillery in both cases. And that was the problem I was having beforehand. I was too far away from the source and I wasn't getting access to what I actually wanted. And I think that that's the way I'll treat it going forward. If I can have something that's really, really good, that's worthy, we'll do it. But I'm not going to just bottle things for the sake of bottling them. So that's not going to be part of the channel going forward. It'll be a kind of very occasional thing. In terms of the V-Pub, I just love it, Vin. I can't tell you how much I love it. I love the fact that the community are okay with me being, you know, I can have Jim McEwen on one week, and then I can have Vin at No Nonsense Whiskey the next. And then the week after that, I can just be going solo and just do my own thing. And as time's gone on, they realise that we're not going to kind of try and pigeonhole the V-Pub into being any specific thing. It is literally a ring-fenced pocket of time for us to do what the hell we want, much in the same way that you would use the space of an actual pub. One night you're going to have a quiz night. One night you're going to have a function, a private function. One night it's going to be all about a specific guest. Another night it's going to be all about the community and having a laugh and getting together. And another night it's going to be maybe a more educational kind of focused thing. That's what it's about. The V-Pub is going to continue doing what it's doing until I am otherwise influenced in any other direction by people like you potentially. In terms of other things, I'm desperately keen to do more pre-recorded content, but I've been saying that since the channel started. And my life is just so ridiculously difficult to do that. I mean, this is the first time now that I'm in a studio that's actually a studio that's not used as a family room for and multifunctional space. This is my space now. So there's an argument that I could do something and set up something a bit more steady and regular like you do. I joke about you being Mr. Consistent, but I think you know that I'm probably jealous of that, right? You have this very good way of getting into a workflow and a routine and knowing what you're going to churn out, knowing what you're going to do with it. I've never been able to get there. And I think that's because of our different personalities, you and I. So there are things that I want to do with pre-recorded content, and maybe one day I will get to that. But honestly, Vin, without it, that's the only way that that's the only way that it's going to grow the channel. I cannot grow the channel fast on live streams. But you know my philosophy. I don't want to grow the channel fast. however, it would be nice to kind of keep evolving things and keep being creative and bringing new things. So there are a couple of ideas, but you'll forgive me for not sharing them or speaking them loudly right now.
Absolutely. I mean, fully aware of that, because this is the first episode of this new idea. Very few people know about this idea until it airs, because until a thing is real, it's just a whisper on the air. And if you stare it in the eyes for long enough, it'll float. So yeah, it's, and you know, it's good. It's good to keep things close to your chest, I think, until they're ready.
If I had talked about the V-Pub and my vision for the V-Pub before it existed, people would have criticized it. But because it exists, they don't. They understand it. It's a bit like if you tell people the name of your child before your child is born, because it's not associated with a living being yet, they criticize your choice of name. But if the child is born and you tell them the name of the, they don't, they just, so it's a little bit like that. And yeah, you just want to keep it under your hat a wee bit longer until you've made sure that it's worthy. And then, but probably it'll end up in the bin like so many other things.
Well, that's the end of the first ever episode of Dram Slam. So thanks very much, Roy, for taking up your time this evening. I know you're a very, very busy man. Do you have anything that you'd want to give a bit of airspace to at the end of this? You know, anything you want to kind of say or anything like that?
If you'll permit me, I'd like to say something nice about you. And because you and I have been pally now, we've been friends for, well, since the beginning for me, and not long after the beginning for you. And I know that as solo creators, people that tend to work individually and on our own, we benefit a lot out of having each other and having that understanding and that perspective that we have. And I think that so many other channels out there have the exact same thing going on. So I'd like to say it's an absolute privilege for me to be the first person in your new format. I'm really, really chuffed to be doing that. And it's still an absolute delight for me to hang out with Vin down in the Midlands of an evening. And buddy, it'd be nice to do this if it was just you and I just having a dram and a chat. Mm. But if we can create content of some value to somebody doing it as well, then that's brilliant. So thank you, buddy. And thank you for everything that you've brought over the last few years. Let's raise a wee glass to No Nonsense Whiskey and his new Dram Slam.
Cheers, Roy. And of course, a glass to Agravitae and the Oswas. Cheers.
Cheers.